Hello, and thanks for downloading the Charlie Higson and Friends podcast, which originally broadcast on Scala Radio, a station where we like to have fun with classical music. It's home to Charles Nove and Simon Mayo and Mark Kermode and me, Penny Smith. And you can find us on DAB, digital radio, scalaradio.co.uk, and on the Scala app. But enough about me. It's time to hand over to Charlie.
Hi, you're listening to Charlie Higson and Friends here on Scala Radio. And my friend tonight, who I've known for, gosh, nearly 55 years now.
No, 44 years, I think.
44 years. The legendary.
45 years.
Well, 45.
Isn't it? Because it's 2023 now.
It's 55. It's Harry Enfield. And we're going over our lives and the intersections with music. Well, let's go straight into a piece of music that you've chosen, Harry. I asked you to think of a track that rouses you.
Yes.
And you went for Shostakovich's Suite for Jazz Orchestra.
I did. And, yes, the reason I chose this, it feels like a sort of great big pompous Russian sort of film from the 1970s starring Peter Ustinov. You know, it's, and when I listen to it, if it was on now, I could show you. Go, who's that over there? Is that Count Orlov? It's Count Ustinov. You know? And who's that pretty lady with him? That's Dame Glenda Jackson. You know, it's just got that feel of
Murder on the Orient Express
That sort of gaiety.
Yes,
it's an
interesting mix of classical, jazz, and as you say, there's a strong cinematic feel to it.
Yeah,
you've got a love of those sort of old films and that sort of, particularly the sort of 50s era. I mean, you've done so many film parodies and voices and like the Cholmondeley Warner type thing. That sort of old school.
Yes, I don't know how that happened. Really, that. Well, I know exactly how it happened. When we were living together in Hackney and next door to each other through the wall, I think Channel 4 had just started and they had those films in the afternoon a lot. So we just sort of watched them on Friday. I think it was Friday afternoon. There was one afternoon in particular they had them. So I'd watch them and...
Yeah, you'd get Will Hay films and St. Trinian's films.
Those things. And it just sort of went in the way of, you know, Brief Encounter and all that.
Yeah.
So I started doing them, thinking, well, we'll do the slobs and the DJs and a bit of this stuff. And then it sort of stuck. And now I think I get asked to do things that are retrospectives because they'll probably include... They know I can do that sort of stuff. But I don't have a particular... Although I do, actually. I'm working at the moment... writing with Jeremy Dyson, the League of Gentlemen, something that will be set in the 50s, if anyone wants to make it, in the year of the coronation. So the idea is how far forward Britain has moved.
What you were doing in so many of those things was sort of looking at today's world through the lens of how things were presented 50 years ago or whatever.
There was quite a funny... what do they call when people send round videos on the...
A meme?
Okay, a meme that Paul Whitehouse sent me, which was the Women Know Your Limits, that sketch. But they, you know, had the voices. This woman comes up with wild and dangerous opinion. I think that we should leave the gold standard. And they'd replaced Carla Mendonca with Liz Truss. But made it black and white. Look at how they look at her. What a venomous harridan, however it is. And it was her, you know, at that time when that was going.
Excellent. I must check that out.
Yeah, it was good.
Well, that sketch, funnily enough, the Women Know Your Rights, has got
limits.
Millions and Women Know Your Limits. Mm. Yes, has got millions and millions of views on YouTube, hasn't it?
I think
it's probably the thing of yours on there that has been viewed the most.
Really, yeah.
But
I remember the one that certainly was viewed the most. I haven't seen for years, but I did a sketch with Ronnie Corbett that the Dawson brothers wrote David and and Matt about a BlackBerry being bust. And it had something like 20 million views or 30, you know, it's just going up and up. So then I, you know, everyone was telling me, you see the night. So I saw and it was like, wow, 20 million. And I looked at, thought, I wonder how many, say, Women Know Your Limits has had, and it was like about 200,000 or something.
No, it's not. It's a huge amount. Well, but it leads me to ask, why have you never had put any of your shows out on DVD?
Does anyone have a DVD player anymore? I don't know. I don't know, Charlie. I think at the time I just... You know me, I quite like to kill things off and it's done. And I did the shows and then...
You can be quite ornery, can't you?
Yeah, ordinary.
No, ornery.
I don't know what that means.
Sort of... Not exactly stubborn, but...
Perverse.
Not doing what people want you to do.
Yeah.
You've never liked that. Yes, you always wanted to steer your own path.
You don't want to get sort of stuck in that thing. And I think when DVDs were coming out, you know, there'd been the videos and then suddenly everyone's getting DVDs. And I just thought, well, they've bought them on video. It just seems like a con putting them out again and, you know...
Well, they don't have to buy them again. You're not forcing them to.
No, I don't know. I just thought, well, it's time to move on from this and do something.
Because, you know, I think people forget just how massive your sketch shows were in the 90s.
Yeah, they were big. Yeah, they were big.
You know, you had...
But everyone who watched them is dead now, except for us.
Well, you could say the same about the Fast Show, but, you know, that still exists out there.
Yeah.
And you had, like, three or four times the number of viewers that we ever had.
Well, I don't know.
I'm telling you.
Well, the biggest show I've ever done was Spitting Image, which used to get about 13.5 million a week. So it's been downhill ever since then.
Well, that's life, isn't it?
It's fine. It's quite actually sobering if you think, it's quite a good thing to start with, something that everybody is talking about, like Spitting Image, and every... You know, the papers would be full of Spitting Mad and Spitting This, and politicians would be talking about it, and you really felt like you were at the hub of...
Well,
it's very different now. It's a terribly innocent show now. You know, there's nothing... I mean, the zeitgeist...
But that's what was so exciting about doing Friday Night Live when we were doing loads of money, was it was live, and it was going out to the nation, and so then the following week we could write... new material for the next show based on how people were responding to it and how it was being picked up. And the tabloids took it on and the government took it on. Thatcher and Kinnock both referred to it.
It's funny, yeah.
And you know, and it was that live aspect that we could, you know, you get a feedback loop.
It feels like it was a much smaller world, you know, because the politicians used to go on about Spitting Image and then they're going on about loads of money or whatever. And it's like, well, we only had a little bit of telly and this many politicians, and it felt like maybe we were just in a big little bubble where we could feel important. Whereas now we're just part of the global thing, aren't we? We're tiny, tiny raindrops.
Harry, you're still a huge, huge, huge star.
Do you think so, darling?
And you've been
a
mainstay of BBC comedy now for nearly 200 years.
Charlie Higson and Friends on Scala Radio.
So, Harry, I've been talking about your love of that sort of, well, the voice as much as anything of old school films and TV.
Old school to even us, you mean, your 50s?
Even to us.
The ancient
school. Yes.
Basically back to ancient Rome.
Which this next piece reminded me of. I'd asked you to play a piece that was perhaps a bit more unusual that people might not have know, and you suggested a Mozart piece, and I glanced at it and thought, well, people know Mozart, don't they? But it's Leopold Mozart, and it's a piece that's played or written for an unusual instrument.
Yes, it's written for a hosepipe. it's Gerard Hoffnung, who was one of the people I discovered in the Hackney Library when we were living there, and there was a little comedy section. It had sort of The Sound of Swinging Cellars, Peter Sellers, and these Hoffnung albums. Oh, God, they look... And then I liked the covers. They had funny cartoons on, and then I got them And he, one of the records was a double act with him and a chap called Charles Richardson that they'd done in 59 on a programme called Saturday Night on the Light. Hoffnung died in 1958, so it must have been 58, just before he died.
And he was very young.
He was 34.
Even though he sounds like he's about 64, doesn't he?
Oh, older than that. Charles Richardson, good evening, my dear Hoffnung. Good evening, my dear fellow. How are you? I'm fine, thank you, Mr. Hoffnung. What have you been up to this week?
Oh, you weren't very well last week, were you?
That's right, now. What have you been doing, Mr. Hoffnung?
You had a dripping nose, dripping eyes. It's just a very funny double act.
Well, I mean, my...
with one person being really annoyed and the other one...
being obtuse. Mm. But, I mean, it was... funnily enough, one of the few albums that my parents had was a Gerard Hoffnung album, which has his monologue of... Particularly the one that I really loved was the... It was supposedly based on a real letter from a builder. It's a claim for insurance, which is a very funny story about lifting up some bricks on a rope,
yes.
Which I listened to over and over again.
He read it at the Oxford Union.
That's right, it's the Oxford Union.
He was a German Jewish, born in Nazi Germany, and they moved, I think, when he was 13 or 14 to Highgate. Mm. And then he learned his English from old people who talk like that.
Well, that's often you get that, you know, often it is, you know, immigrants who become more English than the English. They take on characteristics.
You know, but he was like very good friends of Donald Swan and people like that. And they were part of a generation of people, of musicians and funny people.
Mm.
In an age of innocence, really, just the war is over and a brave new world and everyone is going to be lovely and decent and everyone is going to enjoy classical music written for a hosepipe.
Yes.
And he does one with a vacuum cleaner as well, which Elena Bronn was famous for doing and things like that. And it's just... you know, Festival of Britain, sort of around that time, there was a huge
optimism.
Well, that
era that you seem drawn to.
It's an optimism, isn't
it?
That, you know, it's all...
And an innocence, yes.
Yeah.
But he was in some ways like the sort of Bill Bailey of his time, wasn't he? Because he would do these big concerts with a full orchestra.
Yes.
Which had a lot of comedy mixed in, but also, you know, it is actually very skillful. The music side of it is very skillful.
Yes. He played the tuba.
That's right, yes.
Yes. And there's one of these interviews, they say, you know, he's saying, well, are you? I'm an artist, you know, because he was also a cartoon.
Mm.
He goes, I'm an artist, you know, if you really want to know. It's what you want to know, isn't it? Yes, yes. And a musician. All my artist friends think I'm a very good musician. And all my musician friends think I'm a very good artist.
So, Harry, you've developed a love of classical music in the 80s. And you still listen to a lot of classical music. Is there anything that you've discovered recently that has excited you?
Well, I've rediscovered something.
Right.
That I hadn't listened to since 1974. And that was, my parents got concerned by my love of pop music. Especially Slade and Mark Bolan and things. And they worried about it. And for Christmas, they gave me a record of classical pop music.
Right.
Written by a chap called Waldo de los Rios.
Right.
And it was sort of guitar-y, quite popped up classical music. And they hoped that this would make me go from one to the other. Needless to say, I found it utterly depressing that they hoped that and they couldn't just... let me be me.
What's interesting, particularly, is they didn't seem to listen to any classical music themselves.
No, but what they didn't want...
they didn't want pop music.
Except pop music. And so they got me this record by Waldo de los Rios, and there's a Mozart piece on it that recently, when we were doing the story of the twos, there's a sort of Howard's Way bit section where it's very sort of early 80s, aspiring, you know, he's going to spend £5,000 on the boatyard, you know, investing. What? Yeah, five. And it wanted some sort of pleased with itself music to go with it. And I suddenly sort of remembered this track. So I got in touch with Kate and Neil McColl and Callum McColl, who were the music people on it. And they agreed that this piece had the sort of smuggery that was required. Mm. So we put it in the programme and it just lifted the piece. It made it so pleased with itself. And it was really sad, really, because obviously when I was looking up this thing, I found that he'd sort of released two of these albums. He was a Chilean and he committed suicide quite soon after. I don't know why, whether he was a depressive or not enough people bought his music. So I'm sorry I used it in a smug fashion. It might have been because...
But it's the Mozart 40th, isn't it? And there was a hit, a top 10 hit version of it, but was it his version or a different version?
It might have been.
That, I think, was just called Mozart 40.
I think it might be that.
So that, for Harry, was a blast from the past where parents trying to improve him failed at the time, but something stuck and it was useful later on to make the nation laugh.
Yes, my poor parents. The only thing my dad ever said to me in terms of a career was, I don't mind what you do, but just don't go on the stage because there's 90% unemployment, which was good advice. And so I immediately went on the stage.
Well, my dad did exactly the same. The best piece of advice he ever gave me, he was an accountant, and he said, because I was always writing, he said, well, you know, you can don't stop writing. You can keep writing in your spare time. That's fine, but... make sure you get a proper job, because you'll never make any money as a writer. Uh-huh. And again, like you, I was 16. I completely did the opposite of whatever my father told me to do.
Yeah, yes.
And we've both been lucky that we've made careers doing creative things that we've enjoyed.
Yes, we've been lucky. There are probably 90% of people in our business should have taken their father's advice.
Well, we always need accountants.
But we didn't. But, you know, it's just luck, isn't it, really, that. Well, luck and something. My poor dad, and he got me a suit for interviews. he got me one cut by a tailor in Chichester in Sussex. I went to his, and he got me a suit at probably considerable cost, and so that I'd be presentable in interviews when I left university. And I wore it on stage for about 3 years. And then we did a tour with the Stranglers, Brian Elsie and I, and it was sort of young people who just hadn't been there during punk and just thought it was about gobbing.
Yes.
They were really happy to be there, and we were the support act.
And I bet you went down a storm.
20 gigs. It was actually quite fun, but after 20 gigs, this suit made by Dad's tailor was standing up. And
did you ritually burn it?
I didn't keep it. I didn't send it to the dry cleaners because I'm sure it would have been full of... made the whole of Hackney ill with something. So sadly, it went in the bin, and that was his only other contribution to my career, really.
The great thing about old types of music is you can constantly be discovering new pieces, new composers, and sometimes forgotten composers are kind of given a new lease of life. So is there anyone you've come across recently?
Yes, Isaac Canner Mason's Samuel Coleridge Taylor's Impromptu No. 2 in B minor.
And how did you come across this?
Because I met her and asked
her... The pianist.
Yes, she's a pianist, and I met her and politely asked her what she did, and then she told me, and then I looked her up on Spotify, and I thought, crikey, this person should have been shrieking from the rooftops, not just saying I'm a pianist.
Right.
So I wanted to...
being modest.
I really, really like it, yeah.
And Samuel Coleridge Taylor is an interesting composer, in that he was a black classical composer. Very few of whom there were back when he was composing.
Yes.
Probably was best known for... he did a sort of semi-opera about Hiawatha.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Now, Harry, you briefly mentioned Kate St. John and Neil McColl, who are musician friends, friends of both of ours, who, like so many creative people, have to diversify as much as they can, and they've gone from playing... well, they still do play a lot of...
Yeah, Neil's on tour did a big international tour with David Gray last year.
And Kate has played various...
folk things.
Reed instruments in various different... played with loads of people. But they also now do music for TV and film, and for Far From the Madding Crowd.
Yes.
They were brought in because there's a lot of live music played in the show by like folk musicians and people. And so they organised that and played a lot of that. And you've chosen a lovely piece of folk music, and unusually, it is sung by two actors in the film, Carey Mulligan and Michael Sheen.
Kate did the original music for Harry Enfield's television programme, Harry Enfield and Chums.
Yes. I thought you might have chosen some opera pieces, because I know you love opera. You actually presented, well, you made Harry Enfield's Guide to the Opera.
Yes.
You and Paul doing sort of comedy sketches.
I suppose, it was called Harry Enfield's Guide. I was the product at the time.
Yes.
The brand, I mean.
And it was a sort of introduction to opera. I thought it was a great show.
Oh, did you? Oh, good. I haven't seen it for years.
Well, that's because you
really
refused to put any of your work
it.
Out on DVD or in a version that someone could watch.
I don't think I had anything to do with all that.
Okay.
But, yes, it was Opera North and John Tomlinson. We had doing a bit of Boris Godunov. I mean, he was amazing. And Paul Daniel was the... conducted all the bits we did. It was really exciting, really good fun. But yes, this Trovatore piece is, I listened to a lot of Verdi at the time, around that time. And I think before my show came out, it was quite soon after CDs had come out. And there weren't many CDs of pop bands, so I just bought classical CDs. And so I had like Trovatore, and there was a bit in it that I thought would sound like a TV comedy show if you made it a bit more umpapa. So Kate got it together, and I think the drums are played by Ben Hoffnung on my version, Gerald Hoffnung's son.
Kate's done a lot of musical arrangements for things, including for you, Harry, on a few things, but a lot of people will know the theme music from Harry Enfield's television programme.
Well, yes, they might have known it 30 years ago. Yeah, sorry, yes.
Because of your refusal to put things out in a version that people can actually watch.
Yes, this is... Well, I don't refuse. I mean, no one wants to know anymore, but anyway, it's all on the YouTube.
It's from Act 3 of Il Trovatore, and in Italian it is Squilli e Cheggi la Tromba. But I think it's more popularly known as the Soldiers' Chorus. No spoilers.
Okay.
So sadly, we've come to the end of this edition of Charlie Higson and Friends. My friend for the last 2 hours, and our friendship is now officially over, has been Harry Enfield, who I've known since 1978.
And it's been 45 years.
45 years. And it's been great going over some old ground and some new ground and listening to some fantastic music.
It's been really fun, Charlie. Thank you, Switch. For having me.
Well, who'd have thought when you turned up in Acle all those years ago?
Yeah.
And you saw this person with bleached hair and straight trousers scurrying around, that all these years later we would be sitting talking about classical music.
Yeah, yeah.
Here at Scala Radio.
Exactly.
Which didn't even exist at the time.
No, I do remember once being quite early on in the world of CDs. Like I was saying before, there weren't many pop ones out, but there was HMV in Oxford Street.
Yes.
And there were sort of pop ones upstairs, and downstairs was all classical, and it was huge.
Mm.
And I went, and I was in the opera section looking at stuff, and over the counter was Pete Shelley from the Buzzcocks. And I was like, what are you doing here? In about 1984 or something, you know.
Well, I
thought, oh, my God.
Classical music is for everybody.
Yes, but I was still at the time thinking, you shouldn't be listening to this. I'm allowed to, but not you, Pete Shelley from the Buzzcocks.
Charlie Higson and Friends on Scala Radio. This episode of Charlie Higson and Friends featured an extract of the Soldiers' Chorus taken from Il Trovatore by Verdi, performed by the Hungarian State Opera Orchestra with the Budapest Festival Chorus conducted by Will Humberg. This recording is licensed courtesy of Naxos Music UK Limited and is available to buy from naxos.com. Charlie Higson and Friends podcasts were originally broadcast on Scala Radio in April 2021 and January 2023. Scala Radio is a radio station that celebrates classical music in all its shapes and sizes. We broadcast across the UK on DAB digital radio, on your smart speaker, on the Scala Radio app, and online at scalaradio.co.uk.